Hello and welcome to what possibly is the Short Ball podcast, maybe the Bill Ellis podcast. I'm James McConey, with me Mills Molina and Rick Salizzo. And gentlemen, it is a sad week for rugby, really, with the passing of Sir Brian Lahore. I know you both knew him pretty well. Rick, I guess I'll start with you because, I mean, you met him back in your early days of, you know, media managing the All Blacks and being involved in different sort of roles there.
I grew up, you know, because I'm a bit older. when I was sort of first really aware of the All Blacks as a kid, you know, he was such a legendary player. And then, so as a young journalist, I mean, I was pretty, you know, I was covering all the teams that he coached, you know, particularly the 87 World Cup. In fact, I remember going over to the Po the day after the Rugby World Cup win. And I showed up about midday. There wasn't a lot of movement from the players, but I remember they did a tribute. You know, they do the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Well, they did one at the Poanamo round the pool.
Oh, yeah.
I think Brian was the first person to put his feet in concrete. Yeah. I don't know if it's still there. And then I got to know him really well. When I was working for the All Blacks and he was the campaign manager in 95.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were lucky enough, we had Colin Meads and Brian Lahore who were sort of helping run the team. And I remember one day I was sitting on the bus next to Sean Fitzpatrick and he just elbowed me in the ribs, as he did, and pointed to the two guys in the seat in front of us. I said, "What?" He said, "I cannot believe that I'm sitting on an All Black bus with Brian Lahore and Colin Meads." Fitzy was like a fan.
Yeah.
And every time BJ walked into the room, you felt like that. You just got overawed by his presence. And the first thing he did, he just made everyone feel like they were friends. Like everyone. You see it now in all the stuff that's on social media, and everyone feels that they had a personal connection to it, the whole country. Mm. Because that was the greatness of the man. That, you know, he was probably... I mean, if we had a president, he would have been the perfect president.
Yeah.
And yet, everyone felt like he was their friend. I thought that, you know, such a sad loss and just such a great person. Forget about being a great All Black.
Yeah.
Just one of the greatest people I've ever met in my life.
Yeah. What about for you, Mills? He would have been involved in a few of your campaigns and as an All Black.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I'll just probably echo what Rick's already mentioned. I think as a slightly younger... human being, you'd always sort of heard the stories about, you know, Brian Lahore and obviously Colin Meads, and you always knew that they were these hard bastards, right? And so they were going to be these angry men that you're always sort of scared about. But what Rick's saying is absolutely true. The fact that you know, he was now in an environment where, and I think I heard something on the news yesterday where they said they, you know, we hydrated before the game, whereas back then they used to hydrate after the game.
Yeah.
Here's an environment now, whereas a younger generation, he's come in and he's got this sort of aura about him, and you think, shit, man, he looks like a... Well, he is. He's a big, hard man. You shake his hand and his mitts are probably 3 to 4 times, you know, bigger than yours, and you just know he's this hard guy, and you think, far out. But there's just something about him. There's just something. He didn't have to say anything. You just looked at him. There was just a warm sort of feeling about this man and the presence that he had in the room, and his ability to be able to relate to guys and guys, you know, probably, you know, my generation, and have this thing about them to. And they often say, you know, good coaches are the ones that sort of can motivate players or, to do what they sort of want, even though they might not be that great technically, but if you're motivated and driven because there's a great person in there, then you'll do anything for him. And he for me was that sort of person. And every time, he didn't say much, but every time he spoke in the room or in our sort of leadership group, you know, everyone listening could hear a pin drop, because you knew what the things that he was saying, you know, obviously made sense, and it was worthwhile. And he was the one that came up with the fact that better people would make better All Blacks. Mm. And so, but just a great man to have around as well. You know, being able to obviously sit down and have a good yarn with him, but just real genuine, you know, genuine person, a caring guy, and someone that, as you say, that's what he had about him. He's, you know, from the first time you met him, he didn't even have to say a word. You could tell this sort of person was a, you know, was a great person and a warming character, and that's what he was. So, a very, very big loss to I suppose New Zealand in general, and so fantastic guy.
You know, like he was a big, powerful presence, but he was incredibly skilled. Like he, when he was young, he actually dreamed of being a jockey.
Oh right,
he loved horses, yeah, and he wanted to be a jockey, and then he got a bit big.
A 6'5" jockey.
But he was an incredible tennis player, really talented sportsman. But one of the stories I reckon that summed him up is when he was the campaign manager in the World Cup. We had a camp up in Auckland before the World Cup, and the players went into town as a group, had dinner in Parnell, and got overexcited, and a lot of them sort of came home quite late the next morning, and we had a team meeting at say 10 o'clock, and I think 7 or 8 of them didn't make it to the team meeting, and Brian was sort of like really angry but also really happy, and I said what he said, this is perfect, he said, because this is just what we need to set the standards early on. So he sent me to go and wake those 7 players up. They all came into the team meeting really sheepish. And then BJ got them all to stand up in front of the whole squad, and I've never seen a dressing down like it. You know, it's like, and some of these were pretty established All Blacks, and he just was looking at them, and you know, and saying, "I don't know if you're good enough to be an All Black. I don't know if you're the right person. I don't know if you're someone we can trust." And you know, these are great players. We're just turning into little children, you know. And he just ripped them apart. And from that moment on, not a problem. But after that team meeting, everyone left, went to training, and one All Black, who remained nameless, showed up after everyone had left and walked in and says, "This meeting started yet?" So I had to chuck him in the boot of my car to drive him into training in his training gear. And when no one was looking, he just jumped out and ran around and joined the run.
Was that Frank Bunce?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
Actually, give me a clue, the person didn't make that particular World Cup.
Oh, mate, BJ would have seen him hop out of your car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know, nothing went past him.
Yeah. That's awesome. Do you have any, because I know that, I didn't know Brian Lahore, Sir Brian, that well, but I do know that his friendship with Colin Meads was amazing, and so they're best mates, one farming near Masterton, the other near Te Kuiti, and they would drive so many kilometres just to hang out, and they'd pop up, and you'd see them on TV sometimes on grassroots rugby, just in the stand. They weren't there for any official capacity. They're just pretty much hanging out together, and I think that friendship was kind of, obviously it started in the All Blacks, and there's the story that's been told about Brian Lahore getting the call up to come out of retirement. I think Pine Tree was captain of the All Blacks then against the 1971 Lions, and he wrote the note, didn't he, to his wife, because he got the call and just put the phone down and had to go straight away and just said, "Gone to play in the test. We'll be in contact soon.
Yeah,
you know, give you a call soon." Yeah, I love BJ. And then I thought that was pretty nice. Like, you know, everything was just done with a minimum of fuss, and he was truly humble as well. And that's something that we can kind of, everybody can look up to. And yeah, he's got that status and that mana in New Zealand rugby. Mills, did you have anything? Did he say anything to you, for example, after the 2007 World Cup? When not that I want to bring back any, because I was just wondering. Because I remember when he came back with the team, he was definitely a presence, sort of like running interference when all the media were gathering around.
And that's the sort of guy he was. You know, yeah. The fact that no one wanted to come back to New Zealand, but he wanted to front it. He wanted to get back there and sort of, I suppose, be the shield and get amongst it and do that. And he's right. I mean, he's just an amazing person and an amazing human being. And he wouldn't sort of, if he had something to say, he wouldn't belittle you in any way. And these are the things he does, you know, his words, you know, he'd made you feel bad without actually sitting there and just going nuts at you. Just the things he would say, the calculate, and it wasn't even calculated because it was just coming off off the top of his brain. I mean, it was just kind of like, what he said and how he spoke. You know, he didn't sort of need to do, but yeah, he was a very caring man, and that's probably why you know, a lot of you know, current and former All Blacks feel it's such a very, very sad day, because he could be the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
And you know, regardless of whether you know, some of his, he was any good at it, policies and things, or were any good, people would follow him because that's the sort of person he was.
Yeah.
Well, it's a tribute to him that last week Michael Jones and Joe Stanley drove from Auckland to Marsden because they knew he was unwell. And I know JK gave him a ring because he just meant that much to people, you know. And I mean, it must have been great for you, you know, when you won the World Cup 2011, to see the smile on Brian Lougheur's face, you know, to see what you've done for not only for yourself and the country, but, you know, he's really representative of the All Blacks, isn't he?
Mm.
Yeah.
But like, didn't overdo it.
No.
You knew, you know, a little smile, and he was, you know, he didn't sort of, you know, rant and rave about how great this thing was. You know, he was just, you just knew that he was satisfied, you know. So just one of those guys that are, you know, very, very quiet, humble as, and you know, just soaked things up like that, and knew everyone else had done a very big job to achieve those things.
I do have one Brian Lougheur story, actually, where my family knew the Meads family, and so there was a school disco at Te Awamutu Intermediate, and I wanted to wear an All Blacks jersey. You couldn't buy them in the shops back then. So my dad contacted Pine Tree, and Pine Tree went, "Oh, I don't think I've got one." So he must have, but he said, "I'll see what I can do." But he must have contacted Brian, and Brian sent one up. I wore a number 8 jersey to the Te Awamutu Intermediate school social. Didn't get a pash, but that's not important. I think what the most important thing is that I, you know, they were happy to do that for this kid, you know.
And did you know when you couldn't get a pash with that jersey, that was the future of your
That's really much it, yeah. It set the tone, actually, and I feel like wearing it that early as well pretty much ruined my chances of ever making it. I thank Sir Brian for that just gesture, and I know he's done that countless of times. So, yeah, amazing win streak as well, 47-match winning streak before that 1970 tour to South Africa, knight in 1999, Order of New Zealand in 2007. And I made a list of Wairarapa legends. So you got Sir Brian Lougheur, you got Sir Bob Charles, Sir Murray Halberg, Eke Te Huna, Ross Taylor, Jermaine Clement, you've met Jermaine, Lady Hawk, Sir Peter Jackson, he's kind of turned up later, and James Cameron. And I mean, obviously, that's a pretty esteemed list, but I wonder whether Brian Lougheur, did he ever see Lord of the Rings or Avatar? I don't think he would have.
No, I can't imagine he would have.
But maybe Titanic?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, possibly.
Lady Pam would have been into that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she would have had to, yeah.
She might have convinced him. All right, so we're moving on to the All Blacks squad. It's been trimmed. Scott Barrett returns with his broken hand. Fixed, and out goes Kael Tuanukuwafe, Asafo Almua, Shannon Frizzell, Dalton Papali'i, and Josh Iwane. So those are the players that have been left out, but maybe we should talk about who's in there and why they made those calls. Who wants to have a go at this first? Mills, you ready to talk about the All Blacks and who should play against the Wallabies?
Well, I think those names that you've sort of mentioned there before, it's probably an easy pick. They're all youngsters. I think Josh Iwane is going over there as a development player anyway. So apart from...
How about a head knock? He's not going.
Oh, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, so him and Jacobson.
Jacobson, yeah, yeah. I heard that. Oh, okay.
Okay.
So really the talking bit has always been that six. And they've obviously felt that Fifita needs to go. Shannon Frizzell, who had an outstanding start of the Super Rugby campaign for the Highlanders, sort of misses out. So, I don't know. I mean, I think they've got a good squad.
Against South Africa, I thought he played pretty well.
Yeah, but we haven't sort of got an out-and-out six yet, eh? No one's really put their hand up yet, and that was really... I think they could have gone either way with Frizzell or Fifita. They've obviously chosen to go for Fifita. But the makeup of how, you know, this weekend's game, you know, particularly in the back loose, is whether they go with Artie Savia at the back and shift Reed to six. I think that's probably where they're going to look to go to.
It's quite a tricky decision, isn't it, Frizzell versus Fifita. Fifita's got the versatility and sort of runs on the board as well, you know, with the, and 50 metres out, he could score you this most amazing try. But 5 metres out, Shannon Frizzell is a freak of nature and seems to, you know.
Versatility might be the key, because if they go for Reed, Sevilla and Kane, then that means that they can have a lock six on the bench and Matt Todd.
That's right, yeah.
So, probably the versatility for Fifita has really helped him. And you've also got Hanapo as well, you know, he covers six and lock, as is Scott Barrett. But it's going to be fascinating. I mean, the key, will they show their hand in this test?
I don't think they can.
You don't think so?
Well, you think they have to?
I think they've got to show something. I think after that test against the Springboks, I think Beauden Barrett said in an interview afterwards, yeah, there's a few things that we'll probably look to show against the Wallabies. Oh, when I say a few, I mean like one.
Okay, one thing, yeah. Because you've got to...
In the scrums.
Well, that's the thing. You can probably play a solid game, because one thing I noticed against the Springboks is with that rush defence or that umbrella defence, they weren't trying things that were, you know, crazy innovative, were they? A skip pass from Sonny Bill, I mean, that is pretty much the one time then they betted on the outside, but I thought they must have been, it feels like they must be holding some stuff.
Well, the first thing they need to bring in is school execution. That's where they fell down.
That's right.
You know, so not so much tactics, but just, you know, passing, catching, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, the last World Cup, they could use the group games in the World Cup to get ready for the quarterfinals. We don't really have this luxury because we've got to go in ready to play South Africa. So the next, like, I don't know how many games, three or four games, are crucial, really, to really bed in some of that stuff that they're going to play against South Africa in that first game. So you'd expect, I'm sure they're expecting of themselves a big step up. It was interesting to see Ian Foster say that Reed's still getting back to his form and from the operation, which is cool. He's just such a quality player and a great leader. So
I don't think that, like, when you talk about new things that they're showing, I don't think they need to show too much. It might be one or two things that they might want to try and implement. Well, let's just say it's the exit play. How do they nail that? You've got to look at it last year. Last year they did the same thing. The Australians, they did a rush defence as well, and they put us under immense pressure in that first sort of 10, 15 minutes, and all of a sudden one little sort of defensive error where someone sort of half sort of went up and half didn't, I think Ben Smith broke, and all of a sudden that gave them, the All Blacks, a sniff. They scored, and then they just went back to their game. So I just think they go back to their game, where it was whatever sort of pattern they want to play, and they just got to back themselves to be the absolute best at that, better than what the Australians are. And that's what Test Match Footy is all about, making someone make a really bad error and making them pay for it. And that's been where we've been at our absolute best. So I don't think, you know, when they say this, all these new things, I think it's just little wee technical things. I agree with Rick. I think the execution, particularly their passing and perhaps gelling, now that they've had a couple of weeks together, and stability in the way they sort of name their squad. You know, Shag's always said, you know, right from the get-go when they named their first squad, that they want to retain the Bledisloe, and I think that's a biggie. If they can do that, then they can possibly, make a few changes in the last Bledisloe.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of things that I noticed in that South Africa game where they got on that outside sort of channel, and there was a grubber kick put through. And of course, the South Africans love that. They'll go back, smother it, and it was. And I just thought, well, keep the ball in hand a little bit longer, see what happens, because now you're out there and you've got two weapons in possession, Beauden and Ben Smith. Let's just see what happens, you know, like keep the ball alive, because I don't know, I mean, obviously South Africa drew the game on a kick, but I just think that, you know, actually just trying to get those combinations going, you know, Beauden first game at fullback for, I don't know, he's played there as a, you know, in test matches, but, you know, keep the ball in hand, see what happens, you know?
Yeah, and I think they've got to get the variety right. Like, in the week before that, against the Argentinians, they tried to kick, but again, because of combinations, guys are kicking, you know, they're either kicking and they're doing the wrong kicks, and once you get a little bit your gel together and you get that sort of stability in your combinations, then and all of a sudden the calls that you're getting, you're all on the same page. So you're right. So getting making sure that they get the balance and keeping the ball in hand, because sometimes when you keep the longer you keep the ball in hand, particularly against like the team like the Argentinians, the worse it becomes. But then you look into your kicking game. Do you do those little wee grubbers? Do you do the long ones? Do you do the ones who kick pass? Yeah. But everyone has got to be on the same page. And unfortunately, that's what comes with it when you've just come together, that no one's really on the same page. I think now they've had some good solid time together. They'll start to sort of gel in that department.
Rick, I liked your call about Matt finding a place for Matt Todd, because I feel like speed is going to be a factor. Ardi Savia and Sam Kane probably playing in the same loose trio there. So you're going to be we're going to be a mobile team. Who else do you see maybe coming back in? I guess Aaron Smith at halfback as well.
I mean we're really lucky with Smith and TJ that we've got a great 1-2 punch. So it's how they use that. They tried it the other way, but you know they tend to go with Smith starting. I'm really looking forward to seeing Scott Barrett get some game time. Hopefully he'll be in this game, but he was one of the best players in Super Rugby, I thought.
Yeah.
And as much as it's sad to lose Retallick, it just gives someone else an opportunity. He's a very good attacking line-out weapon, attacking the opposition line-out, does very well there. And the Australians have a good line-out. I mean, they've improved it out of sight in set-piece. Pretty good scrum, very good line-out. And if you think over the last couple of years, they've pushed us most test matches.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that they've had some issues and we know that the Super Rugby teams, not performing that well. But at international level, even though we've won, nearly all the games, they've pretty much been close.
Oh, yeah. And they beat the Pumas, which is, obviously a bit supercharged Pumas because they've got Sanchez and all these players from the Northern Hemisphere, which is no mean feat, right? So they're one from, was it one from two now? But they're doing the same thing as New Zealand and South Africa, where they're trying a lot of players. I think they've got that new fullback, isn't it, from the Brumbies. Is it Tom Banks? And then they went with Kirtley Beale last week. So Beale looks probably pretty good there, Mills, as a fullback. But is there anyone else out there that you think is looking dangerous? And it's great to see, obviously, Leila Farnall back playing at 10. That is a straight shootout, isn't it, between him and who's their first five? I'm trying to think of...
Who's first five?
Foley.
Yeah.
Foley, Burnett.
Yeah, and I think I'd be interested to know what Rick thinks also with the 10-15 combination when they actually, revert back to having Bowden at 10 and then, pushing Bender at the back just to get a bit more stability. I think where the Australians have now sort of got a little bit more sort of steel is perhaps that 9 and 10 combination, only because of their experience. They put Will Guinier out there who's very solid, directing play, and Lilia Fano, who we spoke about last week. That gives you real stability in key positions. I'm really interested in terms of where the All Blacks go to. I think they possibly revert back to having Bowden at 10 and pushing Bender there, and then sort of having Moonga come off the bench.
Oh, yeah.
What do you reckon?
When you played 15, did you ever go into the playmaker role?
Hell no. That was when they started making me kick, when they did the split, and they were like, well, you've got to kick. And I was like, whoa. Okay, we had Mick Byrne there, because we'd split, we'd go to the middle, we'd split. DC would obviously go to his favourite left. And so when you come from the right-hand side moving to the left or the other, you always go to that sort of the same way as kicking. So I was always hoping for a line-out or a scrum to come from the right-hand side, because, you'd go with DC down the left
hand. DC and head punter.
But every now and then, might get a call to come back to me. I'll be like, please, no. And so that's where you rely on.
You had a good punt on you, mate.
Yeah, but that's where you rely on your outsides, because they're actually feeding you the information. Is there a guy back there? Do you need a long kick and kick it out? Because we didn't want to really kick it out.
No.
Do you put it out there? Do you put it up and put a 28-metre kick? Or do you do the little wee grubbers? And then it came down to you whether you executed on it. So I had worked a lot with Mick Byrne on how to execute your little grubbers and things like that. But it was really tough. You can't...
Do you trust yourself? So, like you get the ball in your hands and you'd seen some space you know, say kicking straight at the post.
Yeah.
And you'd hear outside you, you know, kick the touch or whatever, you know. What did you do?
I trusted the outside. And then, well, the thing is, I look at the ruck, okay, and I'll have a little wee glimpse up, but then you hear a call, and then by the time you looked up again, you know, you'd sort of confirm, you confirm that call, but then you always knew there was a different option. And it was in 2010, you know, there was a couple of times where we grubbed through, and we scored a couple of tries off it, actually. It was, we grubbed through against Australia. It got to the halfway, but because he was isolated, and then everyone else was on the same job, They cleaned the ruck, counter-rucked it. We got it back. We went down the far inside and we ended up scoring. And we've done that a couple of times. Now, I suppose if you don't know what's sort of going on, you're watching at home, you're thinking, why the hell is this idiot, you know, grubber kicking from your own 22 or just outside the 22?
So but you could hear McConey.
Yeah.
but it came off. But you soon forgot. Once we scored, you soon forgot that that idiot sort of grubber kicked from there, right? But to answer your question, tough thing to do, and when I seen Maunga sort of get kicks charged down at against the South Africans, I certainly put myself in his shoes because I've been there, done that.
Oh really?
Well, I didn't get them charged down, mate. I was just kind of hoping that the kicks came right.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. I feel like you know, when you talk about the skills and execution of those, Australia looked pretty sharp against Argentina. If you're talking about drop passes, and I did like Taniela Tupou coming off the bench. We've talked about him. So, I mean, maybe what we can, you know, like you say, if it's Bowden, if Bowden comes back in at 10 and has been at and there's Ben at fullback, then what happens on the wings against? I guess Rico comes back in. So he stays there. He's got to get some form. So who's your right winger?
Oh, I'd put Reece out there, wouldn't you?
Sivu
Reece, X factor, and he—I think he just—he get out there.
He looked comfortable at test level, didn't he?
Yeah.
Just seen one game. Yeah. He looked like he belonged.
Yeah, get him out there. I mean, I reckon get him out there because he's in electric form, and you just you know, get him into a finishing role.
Midfield backs, Rick, you can have a stab at the midfield. Because you know so much about that. I wonder whether, I know they'd want to give Sonny Bill more game time, won't they? It's something, some.
Well, he's playing for counties, isn't he?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He's getting some game time, I think.
All right, so maybe.
I think, I mean, I'm really impressed with Goodhew as a centre. I think he's, you know, I think he's world class, and I think he's going to go on and become one of our great centres, actually.
Yeah.
Second five is a toughie, you know. I mean, think about combinations. you know, Lamapa needs a bit more time, you know, to show what he can do. It's, you know, obviously Crotty's coming back from injury. You know, Sonny Bill's coming back from injury. So, I've got no idea what they're going to choose.
Well, I think, you know, Laumapi, even though he did get a run in Buenos Aires, I feel like he needs to have a test match where he is the 12 and they use him and see if he can replicate what he did.
Or do they just need to make a decision now and say, you know, really, this is who we're going to, this is our front line at 15. Let's start betting them in and get those combinations.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Because my feeling is Anton Leonard-Brown is just as good a midfielder as anybody there. So whether you just say to Laumapi, this is your test match, we're going to Perth, it's nice weather, you know, similar to what Japan's going to be like.
Bring him off the bench.
Yeah.
And, you know, where he, I remember it was test against France where he came off the bench and just destroyed them, you know. But again, that's where Anton Leonard-Brown is so good because he covers in both 12, 13. I mean, he's an underrated player, Anton Leonard-Brown.
Yeah. And that's, I suppose that's where, the for me, 10 and 15 is crucial because if you start Maunga and Barrett at the back, then it gives you an opportunity to put Laumapi there because he's not known as a talker. Because 12, you really need someone to organise. I'm not saying Anton Leonard-Brown can't do it, but you want him to focus on, you know, his particular role. If they don't go that way, then and then they put Laumapi there, I think they're going to lose that sort of organisation in terms of organising the forwards around the, you know, the middle of the park in particular. So they'd have to go with the Anton Leonard-Brown. So really, I think what the All Blacks will look for is, you know, who do they go at 10? If they go Barrett, then you know you might be able to say, well, let's put Laumapi out there and give him one last shot. If they don't, well, Anton Leonard-Brown comes into play. For me, Antonio Brown, he'll get picked. He'll go to the World Cup. It's whether they say to him, well, you know, you're going to be our 13 or you're going to be our 12, but we're going to put you out there as 12 this weekend until, you know, Crotty gets back.
Well, let's talk World Cup Bolter. And by that, I mean, when we play the Springboks in our first game, who do you think will be playing that you might not expect to see playing in the team? Or is there somebody who can pretty much leapfrog everyone? Or are you...
No, I don't know.
Because I'm just thinking...
Who have you got in mind?
Well,
you've got a theory.
You've got someone, have you?
Yeah.
Waisaki. No, it's not... Well, I mean, it could be Waisaki, but it's not him. But it's... for example, Angus Ta'avau keeps improving. Yeah. He's mobile. He keeps climbing that ladder.
But he's in the mix at the moment.
I know. I'm talking about a starting position. Like, Owen Franks has had it. So is it Angus? Is it Angus?
He could start. Yeah. He could start.
It's fair to call him a bolter within the squad, right? Because we know who our first 15 vaguely is, apart from the midfield and the back three.
They've told us what they want from props. So the mobility is important.
Yeah, so is it Angus? Is it someone like Geordie who's got no fixed position and they think, well, if we're going to have Bowden at the back, why not have somebody who's telepathic with him at the back and just have that going on?
Because isn't one, I'm interested for your thoughts on this, Mills, but internal competition is part of what makes the All Blacks great.
Mm. Yeah.
The fact that, you know, and I'm sure, you know, when you're playing, what's always intrigued me about All Black environments is the guys that are competing the hardest are quite often the best mates.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And they're just going head to head and they, you know, but when you're on and the other guy's off, he's hoping that you succeed.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It's a weird environment because, you know, in our business, if you've got a rival, you just want them to fail.
And
you actually hate them with a passion. But it's different in the All Blacks.
But it used to be like that. It honestly used to be like that. And then we took a massive change because everyone was wanted the All Blacks to succeed. And it took a massive thing to be able to do because... Naturally, that's what you want. You want to be out there. You want to be the starter and things like that. But also at the same time, now what they've done is making sure that, you know, your unit is working so well that it doesn't matter who's out there. And it's a hard thing to be able to sort of muster. But you know, they've done it.
It's great that rugby can get their head around that because I'm sure it wouldn't. You know, it doesn't seem to work as well in basketball sometimes and those sports where there's quite obviously a star who wants to score 30 points a game and all that sort of thing to be the ultimate team player, or in football as well, where I've heard of people trialling over in Britain and nobody would pass them the ball because they just went, oh, you're a Kiwi, I'm not going to give you a chance, and this is my... So every single trial game was just a waste of time because nobody... That's why it's so great that Sarpreet Singh, for example, goes straight into the Bayern first team because... There's no trials involved. He's playing on the biggest stage.
To your point, if you look historically at our World Cup successes, there's been a player that's been relatively new to the environment. You know, so in 87, Michael Jones, you know?
Yeah.
In 95, you know, we introduced Mertens, Josh Cronfeld, Glenn Osborne into the side that year. The last World Cup, Nehemiah Muscala came in.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, is that this... Seve Rees this time, you know. Quite often you see that in World Cups where someone's sort of like, and again, you know this better than I would, but sometimes when you see a new All Black, they are not aware of the complexity of how hard it is. Yeah. They just get out and play.
Then
in about second, third year, go, oh, no, I better... What,
this they think thing? Too much, think right, too much. Yeah.
And so having someone like that in the side, who's just, you know, particularly out in the outside backs, it makes a big difference, I reckon.
Well, I guess you had that, Mills, with the old Israel Dagg coming in 2011. I'm not trying to sort of like... we'll cut this.
Hey, mate, hurry up. Wrap up, mate. I've got to go. Hurry up.
Don't walk out. But, I mean, he did come in and, you know, there was that sort of element of just, you know, new blood, young blood.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's what you want them to be able to come to an environment like that and have the responsibilities on everyone else. And then they just go out there and just show, you know, I suppose, how great they are, their X factor that they've got. And so that's what's great about the All Blacks. And we've spoken about Sir Brian Lahore. He was big on that, making sure that everyone, you know, wanted their mate or someone in the same position to succeed. Mm. And you'd be supportive of that. And so that's what makes you one of the many things that makes the All Blacks great. See you later, mate. I've got to go. I've got another meeting.
Israel, come on in. Let's sort this out. Jerry Springer. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to just briefly talk about the Mighty Ten Cup. Starts this week, Thursday night. Southland versus Northland in Invercargill. That's your old stomping ground.
I'm calling that game too, actually.
Right. So
how cold is it down there at the moment?
Mate, it's snowing.
Whoa. That's going to be an interesting game if there's snow cover. That'll be fantastic.
If there's snow, Southland wins. They haven't won in 2 years.
Yeah.
Haven't won a game in 2 years.
Wow. Who is coaching down there? Is it still angry little... is it the first five?
No, Dave Hewitt.
Okay, right. Oh, it's Dave Hewitt.
Canterbury, mate. Well, to be a coach in New Zealand now, mate, you have to pay for Canterbury. That's a criteria. Didn't you know that?
Yeah, I guess you do have to be from Canterbury.
My favourite player, Tom Robinson, down there in the snow.
Yeah. He's the only one that'll stand out. He's like your safety beacon, the big ginge. And, I mean, it's actually a perfect game for him. He'll want to stay warm and he'll just be charging around, won't he? Any relations of yours playing or anything like that down there?
No.
No more millionaires. I'm looking at the Shield challenges, and I think Otago, they've got Southland first up in a couple of weeks. Manawatu, Taranaki, Waikato, that's the big one, on September 29th, so they'll lose it there, and Canterbury won't get a challenge. So I love the Ranfurly Shield.
Have you not mentioned the defending Cup champions?
Oh, Auckland, yes.
Thank you, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, isn't it? So Akira Iwani will be playing Mighty Team Cup.
But how good was that final last year?
Yeah, oh, it was awesome.
One of the best games of the year.
It was.
Yeah.
So I'm glad Auckland's strong because Canterbury's had such a, sort of, not an easy run, but just a comfortable run, haven't they, at the top there for a long time in the NPC?
Rugby World Cup, yeah. Mighty 10 is the NPC is always great because you've got all those Super Rugby players coming back into the mix and it's going to be interesting. Yeah. Love it. Southland takes the Shield next week though.
Well, I mean, they need something to happen down there. Otherwise, are they going to wrap things up? Or what are they? No, I mean, I actually think that right now the mix of NPCs are awesome because I'm not sure about this Premiership Championship thing, but seems to work because suddenly you've got a final and everybody's pumped for it.
What you love about the minor 10 is you really identify with, the Blues is my Super Rugby team, but at the end of the day I'm an Aucklander, and so when Auckland were playing that game against Canterbury at Eden Park, I was there, it was free. But, that was my team and that's what the Mighty 10 Cup gives you, isn't it? You know, that sort of that tribalism, which is amazing. It's an amazing competition.
Oh, it did take me a while to get used to Super Rugby because I'm a Mulu man. I love the tri-colours.
You seem to have done it quite well.
What's that?
You seem to have absorbed the cheese quite well.
Exactly. As soon as I started winning, I was really into it. No. But, I mean, when you're a Waikato person and then, they say that this is the Chiefs and you're partnering with North Harbour and stuff, you're sort of like, wait, we hate North Harbour. Yeah, what's going on, And then you get used to the fact that, okay, all these other teams. I remember going specifically to watch Stephen Larkin play. He was a fullback back then for the Brumbies, thinking, oh, I'd love to see this guy play. So you actually, it did add that other element. But those rivalries are amazing. Going up the, State Highway 1, which is a nightmare right now, but to beat Auckland, that's a huge, those are probably my favourite memories, winning the Shield in 93, the 1992 NPC final against Otago, when they came up, that was brilliant. Loved that. Absolute thrashing. And although Richard Lowe got a bit handsy with Greg Cooper, was that in that game, that he eye-gouged him? Yeah, he was out for 9 months after that. No one wants to talk about Richard Lowe because they're scared of him. And... But all those, I think that's the thing. It's part of your rugby DNA, isn't it? Where you're from. And Mills, you're a Southlander.
Yeah, I'm a Southlander, but I'm also an Auckland supporter.
Right.
But deep down, I'd like to see the Southlanders win something. 2 years, man, it's a long time. But like Rick, I'm glad Auckland won last year too.
Just one game. That's all you're asking for.
That's it, mate.
All right. Hey, well, that is the podcast for this week. We've covered off a lot of things, and thanks very much to both of you.
What's the podcast called?
I've been told that it's still called The Short Ball, but I'm wanting to tweak it somewhat. I quite like Bill Ellis, but is that too obscure and people are waiting for Bill? But who knows?
It's your podcast.
It's your podcast, mate. Why don't you do it around the position you used to play, mate? Hey?
What's that?
10.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, but surely you can come up with something, mate.
Do you think when they actually meant to give you the one jersey?
Yeah, probably. I did fill in the prop as well. Yeah, just when we were short.
Just go between 10 and 0.
Yeah, only loose head though, because you don't want to get your ears like completely munted. Yeah. All right, that's the show. Cheers.